Hey, John Yano made it on the ballot.
He believes that we need... He's the one who
desperately believes.
No, he's the one who believes that we desperately need to marginally increase the police budget, according to his candidate statement at the Canby Report live show, right?
Yeah.
And also,
he's against a rent freeze.
But he's in favor of rent rollbacks, which I remember thinking, oh, that's sense of bonkers.
I mean, rents are expensive, but...
All the best, John. Hope to see you at the next live show. Goodbye. There are 32 days until the Vancouver municipal elections. This is the Canby Report. I'm Matthew Naylor.
And I'm Ian Bushfield.
And today, Patrick couldn't be with us, but sends his regrets.
His broken ankle, or it's not broken.
No, it's Dungeons & Dragons. He's playing Dungeons & Dragons.
But he also has an injured ankle from hockey or something.
How does that have affected his ability to podcast?
He can't get here?
I mean, like, I understand being afraid to be, you know, around you, as I nearly got bayoneted by a microphone stand earlier today, but... Dangerous work, this profession, this hobby, this calling, whatever it is.
Before we jump into the content for today, we have another live show coming up on October 4th. Tickets are available for our patrons already, but we'll put those available for the public on Monday. So stay tuned for that. And we'll also have a special election night event on October 20th. So yes. Stay tuned for details for that.
Yeah, no, things are falling into place nicely for that. And I am very excited to see all our you know, regulars out at both events, actually, and, you know, bring a friend. Also, you can help support the show by going to patreon.com/CanbyReport.
Patreon.com/CanbyReport, as it always is.
Yes. It is and forevermore shall be patreon.com/CanbyReport, where, as a patron, you can join and get things like our full-length interviews with the mayoral candidates and... You know, encourage us to print merch, which we have some on the table today. We have Canby Report buttons.
We'll be ordering stickers soon, and I'll probably mail those out. Stickers, it turns out, is much easier to mail than buttons, because the post office doesn't like things that can poke through envelopes as much. But
who knew?
Who knows what you'll get if you're a supporter?
Well, later in the show, we're going to bring you Ian's conversation with Tom Davidoff and Nadia Stewart. Do you want to tell us a little about that?
Yeah, so I hosted this housing forum last week with Nadia Stewart, was my co-moderator, and she's a journalist, an actual journalist with Global BC, and Tom Davidoff is Vancouver's favorite American socialist housing economist, depending on what angle you take on him.
It's a competitive field, that one.
Yeah, very, very busy area. We hosted this housing forum where we had all the major mayoral candidates and representatives from the parties, 9 people. It's in our feed. If you haven't listened to it yet, go through and try and figure out who will build the most housing or who will veto all scary development in your neighborhood, depending what perspective you take. The answers won't surprise you, but we decompress together to try to figure out sort of, you know, who won the debate, as it were, who lost the debate, and who impressed us. And I thought it was a good conversation, so we'll play that in the second half of this show.
Well, let's get to the news, and boy oh boy, Vision has decided to go dark, to not run a mayoral candidate in addition to their slate of council, park board, and school board aspirants, as Andrea Reimer, current city councilor and friend of the show, backs out.
She had sort of played the will she, won't she game for a little bit. There was this rumor going around. Even when I would finish the housing forum, people were saying, I think she's in. And then the deadline was Friday, and it was like Friday morning. She said, you know what? Maybe a guaranteed job at Harvard is better than a risky chance of, you know, winning or not winning an election. And so she pulled out, and then shortly after, Vision went, yeah, we'll just not do anyone. And this all follows after last week, Ian Campbell suddenly deciding he didn't want the nomination. And it turns out there was a reason, it seems, he didn't want to seek that nomination.
Well, yes, there was a reason. So according to some reporting by Jen St. Denis, Ian Campbell was involved in an incident of a domestic nature during the Olympics, which was stayed. This is probably what he was referring to when he cited his complicated personal journey when deciding to drop out of the race.
The real controversial bit, I think, is that when Vision has its green light process, like every party has, and we talked about this mostly in reference back to Hector Bremner and the NPA back in the day when he didn't pass a green light, but Ian Campbell did go through a green light committee process with Vision, and he disclosed to them that he had a DUI, and, you know, he paid his fine for that and did his time, as it were, but he didn't tell them about this domestic assault charge that was stayed. And that's not to say he was found guilty, it was just the charges were dropped, but he did have several court appearances, and this is something that...
It's something that a political party is gonna want to know about.
Because it's not that hard to find. So you can do court record searches online and find a lot of stuff, but to
this
really find...
This doesn't come up in court record searches online. We were able to verify that particular thing. And that's the kind of due diligence that a party with absolutely no resources at all should be doing. A party with Vision's resources probably should be going the extra mile and actually visiting the courthouses to do registry searches.
But he's out of the race now, and so it gets into this area of, like, I guess that explains the story. It's maybe done there. And it leaves Vision in this weird state of now they're not running a mayoral candidate after having run the city for a decade. And their goal, I think, of always running a mayoral candidate was recognition of having that top of ballot person to really pull up their council candidates. And now they're kind of left going, well, maybe we'll endorse, well, not endorse, but support, because parties can't actually support independent candidates, it turns out, but support Shauna or Kennedy. And they haven't named them specifically, but they reserve the right to support someone else.
Great. Fantastic. So as Vision fades into the sunset, we turn our eyes now to the remaining candidates, 127 people.
No, 158.
158
for 27 separate positions in the city of Vancouver.
Okay. That is just a kit and caboodle of candidates right there.
I think it highlights what happens when you have such a change year when no one really knows where the power lies. So
everything is up for grabs, and so everyone's grabbing for the brass ring.
There's 21 separate people running for mayor, and I'd been keeping this list, this spreadsheet of who was slated to be nominated, and turns out I missed like a dozen people because...
Well, I feel like the spreadsheet was like a total team project that everyone on the Slack channel, which is one of the things that you can get access to if you contribute to patreon.com/CambyReport, was, you know, and in fact, anyone who listens to the show was able to contribute to. And so it wasn't only you, but really everyone who has failed.
It was a real collective failure. But we did see a lot of names that were expected.
So many individual failures in the making.
There was a lot of the familiar names we've talked about, the Bremner.
The Bremner, Sylvesters, you know, the Scots.
Exactly. And
the Youngs and Sims, also Scottish names.
And then there's Fred Harding, who's from Vancouver First, and David Chen from Pro Vancouver. We start getting into the smaller parties like Connie Fogle, who came forward for Idea Vancouver. And Idea Vancouver is Jamie Lee Hamilton, and anyone who's followed Vancouver politics will eventually have seen her name around. And she had talked about running a mayoral candidate, whose name I forget, but he eventually disappeared, and Connie Fogle came forward. And Connie is the wife of former famed socialist councillor for City of Vancouver, Harry Rankin. Except Connie left COPE years ago, and more recently has kind of gone off into the conspiracy land of just everything is a one world order conspiracy. And you know what? She's part of the Independent Democratic Electors Association, and I guess they're being as independent as they can be.
Yeah. I mean, one of the most liberating things you can do is liberate yourself from facts. Facts are one of those things that I find is constantly bringing me down.
One of the other interesting names I saw come forward was Angela Dawson actually did get her name through.
Yep.
But she is more famous as Roller Girl, the person who roller skates around Broadway and Cambie and other intersections in Vancouver in a tutu and bright colors. And she's actually on the ballot as Roller Girl because you are allowed to use an alias if you choose.
Well, congratulations, and vote for her if you feel that her policies are the best ones for the city. I also saw Jason LaMarche, who he's been involved in the Federal Liberal Party for as long as I have lived in British Columbia, so 12, 13 years. And I know him currently as someone who posts a lot of anti-Trudeau rhetoric on his Facebook of a quite vitriolic bent.
Yeah, I think I've seen a couple of his posts that were just like more trollish than, I don't know, contributing to the discourse.
Yeah, so we'll see what he can contribute to civic discourse in his run for mayor.
Scrolling down into the council candidates, I mean, there's all the names you'd expect from the major political parties, and then there are a couple still interesting names, like at one point there is just a guy named Spike, and that's an alias from, I forget what his real name is, but that was mentioned in one article. But Spike is running for council if you wanted to vote for Spike.
I don't... Who...
And I believe also Mrs. Doubtfire.
I have to say that I have a little bit of respect for Roller Girl at this point because I knew she was running.
Yeah. She had a campaign running. She had a Kickstarter or something.
Yeah. Like, it existed. It was there. It was a campaign. It was not a flash-in-the-pan newspaper boat in a stormy stream kind of nonsense candidacy that some of these look like. But, you know, 158. Cripes.
Well, and I saw if you get outside of the Lower Mainland, you find a lot of constituencies where there just aren't races happening, or there'll be fewer people running than there are actual spaces to elect. And I had to actually look up the rules on this from the community charter. And what happens, I believe, is the clerk allows the nomination deadline to extend by a couple days if you don't have enough candidates running. And they hope someone steps forward. And if that doesn't happen, they just acclaim everyone who ran. And then say there's five people who ran for six spots, they can just appoint the sixth person.
Cool.
Democracy. If you don't run, you could have random chosen person.
Like, the whole theory behind government in Canada is that we're just assisting the Queen in ruling her subjects. Like, we are trying to make it easier on the Queen instead of having to, like, figure out how to pick up the garbage in Langley. She has, like, created the structure where we can help her do that for us.
Well, a municipal government is even more removed from that, since it's a creation of the province.
Mm-hmm. And one of the creatures of the province.
And as we've learned, can be messed with at the will of the premier.
Mm-hmm.
If you scroll down into school board, you will find that Mrs. Doubtfire is running as well. Candidates do still have until 4 p.m. on September 21st to withdraw their name. So we may know in a couple days if perhaps this list will be slightly less. But remember that your ballot will be entirely randomized when it shows up in front of you on October 20th. So you'll really need to know who you want to vote for to find them on that messy list.
Now, and when is the name... Like, it's going to be a drawn name thing for the list of candidates, right?
Yes.
It's not the perfect randomization where every ballot is individually randomized.
So the random order ballot draw, which is the official name, will take place in the council chamber, third floor, 453 West 12th Ave, City Hall, at 5 p.m. on September 21st.
An event that every candidate can come out of saying, I was robbed.
Well, and candidates and their official agents and the media are permitted, so we may have to be on location to watch the draw of the candidate names. So here's the process that's going to happen on Friday afternoon. Each candidate's name is going to be written on a separate piece of paper. That's 158 pieces of paper in total, split across the four different elections.
It doesn't specify the size of the paper. Right?
No.
Like...
But all paper needs to be as similar as possible to each other. Each piece of paper will be folded in a uniform manner, so the names are not visible. I'm assuming in half. Each piece of paper will be placed in a container which will then be shaken to make sure their distribution random. The chief election
officer... That's not going to ensure true randomness.
The chief election officer will direct a person who is not a candidate or candidate representative to withdraw papers one at a time. I feel like we could get in there.
Oh, yeah. We should go. We should ask the clerk of Vancouver if we can be the person who...
And for each race, the name on the first paper drawn is the first name on the ballot. The name on the second paper is the second, and so on, until all the candidates' names are on the ballot.
It's nice that they specify that the first is first, and second is second, and the first is third, and the second is fifth, and the, you know.
Yeah, there's so many ways they could have done it.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can, I think it'll make amazing audio content for us to be there for the drawing of the names.
Mm-hmm. And of course, tweet the city of Vancouver saying that you want the host of the Cambie Report to draw the names, because we have been such good stewards of your democracy up until this point. Well, that day, so Friday, will mark the last day of the non-campaign period. Now, I'm kind of familiar with this as a Catholic. I have, like, ordinary time and, you know, Advent. And the advent of the election, this sort of writ period, except there aren't, I don't think there are writs of election issued for this. But
not as far as I know.
You know, the campaign period, as ordained by the province, commences on Saturday. And that means that the campaign spending laws also come into effect.
Including for third parties.
Including for third parties. So a series of signs that you see around the region, around Vancouver, at a SkyTrain station, smiling out at you with a familiar but not too familiar color scheme. They might be disappearing this weekend.
That or someone might finally register their third-party spender. What? Probably not. But so we're referring, of course, to this whole Vancouverites for Affordable Housing group that launched the ads for Hector Bremner. And we've talked about this a couple weeks in a row. The new development here is that the page that was hosting these has disappeared from Facebook. It's been removed. Now, there's another piece in the Vancouver Star Metro talking about this, that Justin Fung is claiming credit that he made complaints to Facebook because before he founded the HALT Housing Action for Local Taxpayers group, he actually had a little Facebook page called Vancouverites for Affordable Housing, where they complained about foreign buyers and expensive Vancouver. And so when this AstroTurf or whatever group pops up to start supporting Hector Bremner, he, I guess, complained to the Facebook elders and they maybe deleted it for infringement. Or
did they
maybe,
delete it? Did they delete
or
it?
Maybe the group just deleted it of their own accord.
I don't
it's
know,
not
even,
clear.
You don't even have to delete it. You can make it unviewable. Like, I am familiar with this because I've run candidate and MLA Facebook pages, and you can just make them disappear from the internet.
Yeah.
And they might reemerge later with all the same likes.
All like 150.
It's a small ball game at Canadian provincial politics.
The other thing that came up is there was another AstroTurf or unknown sponsored page that started running ads that were directly attacking Ken Sim, saying he had sort of Me Too allegations against him.
Whoa, what?
Yeah, this went around our Slack because some people saw these ads and they were pretty toxic of just like, Ken Sim, what is he hiding with regards to allegations?
There is so much content on our Slack.
It is very busy.
It is unbelievable. So I didn't see that at all. Jeez, that's...
That one was pretty toxic. And I don't know that they were at all connected, but people did decry them as like, this is not cool. And it seemed borderline defamatory.
Yeah. And like, from what I know about the people who I suspect are behind Vancouverites for Affordable Housing, that's not their personal style. I'm confident saying that, but you know, I've been surprised and disappointed by people before, and I'm sure it won't be the last time that ever happens in my life, so I am more than willing to be corrected. I mean, like, it's unfortunate because Photoshop has made, like, I can't say good graphic design, but like reasonable graphic design, like, you know, a graphic design with some kind of pinch of production accessible to so many people that, you know, if that kind of thing were created, even 10 or 15 years ago, it's a much more select group of people who would mm-hmm. be able to do such a thing. But now, you know, all bets are off.
For sure.
Well, that's crappy, though. That's, yeah, goodness. Don't, like, I know that a bunch of candidates listen to this, and I'm, you know, reasonably confident that most people are in this for the right reasons and doing it. But, like, don't lose sight of the fact that you're all participating in a democracy that you are defining the character of by being in the race. And if you are going to be shitty to one another, you are making our democracy shitty. So don't.
Well, and this almost came out in the... because I signed us up for the Coalition Vancouver mailing list because I was just, I don't know, curious in a masochistic kind of way. And the email they sent today following Wei Yang's performance in a couple debates recently was just bizarre in a way that she described the big mayoral debate that went on this week as a bizarre situation, which is just weird for a candidate. But then she goes into like targeted attacks at every one of the other candidates. You know, Kennedy Stewart's a socialist who will take all your money. She goes into how Hector Bremner doesn't own property as an issue and like a knock against him, maybe, which is bizarre. She complains about Fred Harding.
Wei Yang, we want to have a landed gentry, or Wei Yang, I'm trying to mow you down with my car, because I am furious.
It did come out that she denies that she had a distracted driving because of an electronic device charge, which, because she was using makeup while mm-hmm. driving.
Don't put on makeup in the car.
Or use your phone.
Or use your phone. You're taking both hands off the wheel to powder your face. Like, sure, at a traffic light, fine. I've taken both hands off the wheel. But you're not paying attention to the road when you are doing such a thing. If you are paying attention to your face, unless you show up, you know, wearing some kind of abstract Jackson Pollock creation. Don't do things other than drive when you are driving. You have literally taken the lives of everyone around you in your hands. You owe it to them your full and complete attention.
And don't insist that the cyclist be on the same road as you if that's how you're going
to
drive.
Yeah, I want to be far away from people who are, oh my God.
I want physical separation.
Yeah.
Like a separate lane for cycles.
Like, cyclists make up around, according to the latest Mocare statistics, 8% of the...
8 to 10, I think, of City of Vancouver.
Yeah, City of Vancouber. So,
but sorry, it's 2% if you ask Wei Yang, because she uses the Metro stats.
Mm-hmm. So we'll take 2% of the Metro Vancouver road network, please, just for us, and 8 to 10% of Vancouver's.
But the other thing that's come up is, going back to Justin Fung, is he started a Kickstarter because he's very, very interested in knowing who ran these billboard ads. And this is a very important thing for him to know. And the way he hopes to do this is by launching a bounty for information that anyone may be able to obtain or pass to him. But to fund his bounty, he's launched a Kickstarter. So you can donate to Justin Fung's Kickstarter to find out who is giving money to the pro-Hector group.
Like, what a... Oh, my goodness.
And I agree with you. This is dumb.
Like, please fund my secret campaign so I can uncover the secret campaign. Like, first off, any bounty that he's offering is some kind of inducement that I'm sure could be counted as an election expense or, you know, third-party expenditures. So tread carefully. Yeah. Yeah. Assuming this doesn't happen before the... But also, like, how would one go about doing such a thing? I'm sure it would involve the illegal access of a computer system, which is an offense punishable by up to 10 years in jail. So don't. Don't go hacking trying to find out who has this thing. Don't try and view the illegal contract. Not illegal. Don't try and view the contracts that you are not entitled to view. Maybe just leave it be. We wrote the laws one way. There literally is no way that this will have any impact on the election at all. The hottest of takes for I Am Irate, for Kennedy's government... Oh, nah. Whatever. Kennedy Stewart's government reform, voter, electoral nonsense. plan that was apparently released when? Today?
Today.
Today is bad. It's bad.
I actually don't disagree with you. So Kennedy Stewart has said very clearly, as one Justin Trudeau once did, that this will be, if he wins, the last election Vancouver has under an at-large system. And you and I and Patrick have all said, I believe, and we all agree on this, that Vancouver's system is the worst of all systems.
Yes.
But Kennedy's solution is to give us basically one of two ways forward. And one of those ways forward would be a ward system, and one would be bringing proportional representation to Vancouver. But his way of deciding which we get is, rather than having a referendum at the local level, he is going to just use the results of the provincial proportional representation referendum that's happening this fall.
And like a kettle that has had three or four beers, I exploded upon hearing this. Because, like, I think it is entirely possible and reasonable that a person entirely fair thinking in their, you know, looking at the political system might want a different way of electing people to represent them and govern them provincially versus municipally. It's, you know, we have a Westminster system provincially and federally, and we do not have a Westminster council. That would be insane. It would be insane. And this plan is insane. And also, by the way, perverts the election, the like referendum on electoral reform that is happening right now. Because not only are Vancouver voters now voting on whether or not they are going to be changing their provincial representation, they are also voting with the knowledge, the asterisk, the like codicil to the ballot, that if Kennedy Stewart wins, whether they vote for him or not, there is a chance that their vote will be changing not only how they elect their MLA, but also their city councillor. And that's insane.
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't know anyone who's read this and been like, that actually makes sense to me. I get why you would do that. It's just like you said for a second before we hit record here that it doesn't make sense to do another referendum, but I think it makes less sense to use wrong referendum.
Yes, it doesn't make sense to do referenda ever. Like, I am opposed to the referendum in principle, because I am opposed to referenda, because referenda are not legitimate expressions of the people's will, because they can be gamed. Like, it is easy to game a referendum. You can change the wording, and like very simple psychology, including like the inclusion of the word change or not, can scupper or send a referendum soaring to victory, independent of what like actual scientific opinion polling research would suggest is actually the people's will. Do you want to change the electoral reform system? Gets a very negative response compared to, do you believe that the next election should be conducted under a form that is different from the current one? Like, it's so easy to mess with this stuff when a referenda are concerned, and so I don't think we should do them. And like, I agree with Kennedy Stewart that we should not have a referendum to decide whether or not Vancouver is going to have a ward system or not, but we definitely shouldn't do it this way. Well, Kennedy Stewart, I think you're trying to ruin, like, it's curdling the referendum like milk past its prime and pouring it out over the streets of Vancouver. Bad, bad candidate.
I don't know how to throw this over to my discussion with Tom and Nadia, which was much less heated, but
why don't we do it clunkily and incredibly awkward way?
I think that's perfect. That's perfectly our style.
And so now,
here's my discussion with Tom Davidoff and Nadia Stewart. Well, I'm sitting down with Tom Davidoff and Nadia Stewart. Welcome to Canby Report, both of you.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thanks.
So on Wednesday evening, which feels like a lifetime ago already, it's been such an exhausting week. Tom, you were telling us about all of the chaos in your life, and Nadia, you're planning a wedding, and I did a talk on fake news this morning for some reason, so it's just been a lot of stuff going on. But we ran this housing forum, and we'll decompress and maybe get some thoughts out on how everyone did, but maybe we'll just start with, What were the overall takeaways for you, Nadia, as my co-moderator, essentially?
You know, overall, I thought it was a great debate, a great discussion. You know, the key thing is we did get some solid numbers from these candidates. And so I think, Tom, even, you know, you made that comment as well. You know, this goes back to accountability. So we have something that we can hold these people to in the long run. I think as well, you know, as much as I would have loved some more crosstalk, the format just didn't allow for it because there are just so many candidates in this race. And I think that's what stood out to me the most. You know, there's so much to sift through if you are a voter in Vancouver in terms of trying to get to the bottom of who's got the best platform for this city going forward. There are a lot of people and a lot of platforms to go through.
I know, Tom, you're struggling with this. You had to pick basically the top people most likely to win because we saw the official numbers come out from Vancouver Elections Office today, and there's 21 people running for mayor. There's 70 plus people who are going to be on the ballot for council. Just briefly, what was the criteria you used to say who's in and who's out?
Well, so there's candidates. So I got maximum one per party. So that was easy. So now who's going to be, you know, I know people on parties and that was, you know, a little bit of who I know on which party. For example, on the Greens, you know, Adrian, I think at the time I was planning this was maybe going to be in for mayor, maybe not. So her position on council wasn't obvious. Pete Fry obviously goes back to the last election. So that was a natural call. Then you get to independent candidates for mayor and then parties more on the fringe. And there I said, if you haven't had somebody elected to any position, I'm looking for a clear indication of about 5% support in polls. And so there's a bit of a kerfuffle with that. Pro Vancouver, a few weeks in, it didn't look that way. And I told them, guys, you know, you're off for now, but I want to give you guys, you know, the option should it be clear. Then you had a pretty ambiguous poll from Main Street. And, you know, I thought I'd give them the benefit of the doubt. And that was largely because they were, and I'm just going to say it, a tremendous nuisance online. And I didn't want to be swayed by the fact that I found them very irritating. I wanted to play it, you know, as straight as I could. And so I thought, give them the benefit of the doubt and put them on the stage as well. I don't think we left anybody out showing 5% plus. If we did, I got to say 9 was challenging enough.
At the table, we did have Candy Stewart, David Chen from Pro Vancouver, Christine Boyle from One City, Shauna Sylvester, Ken Sim from the NPA, Diego Cardona from Vision, and he had to step in because Ian Campbell had dropped out of the mayoral race a day or two prior, so it was nice to see Vision put someone up. Pete Fry from the Greens, and finally Hector Bremner from Yes Vancouver. For you, Nadia, who won the debate, as bad of a question as that is, in such a situation like this?
It is. It's a tough question to answer. I don't know if I'll declare a winner, but I think I'll declare some strong contenders. I thought Christine came out really strong. She did really well. And considering she's somebody that I don't think a lot of people knew a lot about, she had a good night in terms of getting across her message very clearly. Shauna Sylvester, I thought, came across as a very reasonable, well-informed candidate. But we can talk more a bit later about why maybe that isn't translating well to the rest of the population. You know, I think the front runners were the front runners and they did what front runners do. You know, they proved to us why they are in the front. But I think we also learned maybe a bit more about them and about their style. And so I think Vancouverites need to look more at that as they consider who to vote for. I appreciated, you know, the conversation from Pete Fry and from Ken Sims, as well as some of the perspective that Gene Swanson brought to the table.
Yeah, it was a very interesting crowd. The audience there was largely from development industry or alumni of Souder School of Business. And it's an almost natural constituency for someone like Ken Sim or Hector Bremner. And I think that was kind of reflected in what I heard from the audience is they were the only ones who I think really got an applause line. Although Pete Fry did get a laugh line in there when he made his West Side Story joke.
I thought that was a fan. I was clever. Applauding. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think it was the only laugh line of the night. Unfortunately, it was a very...
You know, you're right. There were no jokes. I think one thing that really stood out was the lack of attacks. You know, there's no, you're no Jack Kennedy. Yes. You were Kennedy.
There was actually, there was only one other laugh line. And that was when somebody asked, I think the question was, would you race the empty homes tax or something like that. And Gene Swanson said, sure. And everybody.
Why not? Yeah.
Why not? That was great. I agree.
And the only attack was from Gene to Ken Sims about shelters for seniors.
Hmm.
She went at him.
Yeah, I think she's got a very strong and direct experience on that issue. So it's, I think it was more of a personal, I know that you think that's a good idea, but in my experience,
it is not.
Which is interesting. Yes. It's good to have her there for that, I think. Mm-hmm. Did you have anyone else who stood out for you, Tom?
Well, you know, I think Kennedy Stewart, some people thought, played four corners. You know, he's the number one in the polls, so you'd expect he wouldn't have an incentive to take a lot of chances. Ken Sim really did, which I thought was interesting. You know, I set up this question of, because I wanted to get people on the record, there's this uncertainty over what the role is of neighbors. Do they get to veto a project, or do they have more input than everybody else, or the same input as everybody else? And he really went there with veto. He said, if it's a great project, but the neighbors hate it, you vote against the project. And you know, that was really putting his foot firmly on one side or the other. I thought that was remarkable. On the other side of Ken Sim, I also heard, you know, I asked a pretty tough mathematical type question about what the impact of community amenity contributions is in terms of either scaring off or not development. And I thought he answered that in a really subtle way that was, you know, really reflected, you know, in intelligence. So I thought Ken Sim, you know, I don't love the answer about neighbor input, but that's a matter of personal preference. As a matter of style, I did think the really clever answer about CAC stood out to me.
You mean it was a bit better than Hector's? Well, you know what the answer is. Isn't it obvious?
Well, you know, Hector takes a different position. And, you know, I don't want to put my thumb on the scale about who's right or wrong. Long story, I think I should have asked it the question, what happens if you cut the CACs? Because it may be that a 30% increase in CACs actually would be prohibitive if the city's doing them right. Long story. But yeah, so, I mean, I think Hector's answer was fine. And generally, by the way, I thought Hector handled himself quite well on stage. I thought Hector's answer was fine, but it didn't. It was a bit of the hit the answer with a hammer. Ken's was, you know, I don't know, Zorro with the knife. It's very elegant.
I kind of agree with your assessment of all the candidates, but thinking about it, I'm trying to think if anyone underperformed. And I think for what they were trying to do, each of them actually was able to make their case pretty strongly. I think all of them, we didn't necessarily agree with the people of other parties, but I don't know if any, like even Gene, where it's a very tough audience, was still able to stand her ground. It takes something to yell for a mansion tax in front of mansion owners.
It does. You know, I, regardless of what you think about Gene Swanson, I will always respect the fact that no matter where she is, no matter the crowd, she is always true to herself. And she was that, I think, on Wednesday night.
She articulated a clear ideology. I thought that was a strong performance. I guess maybe one interesting one is David Chen. I mean, why not go on the attack, make a splash, come up with a bold pronouncement. I did, you know, maybe it was in what he said. I think for all of us, it's a little challenging to really hear everything everybody said. But, it, you know, it, given you're at pushing maybe the margin of 5% on the polls, you'd think, you know, when you're 23% and ahead of everybody, you want to dial it back a bit. When you're at 5%, why not take a risk? Because you're going to probably lose anyway. But if you go for it, maybe there's a big upside. So I didn't see a lot of risk-taking from him.
I think that's really astute. I mean, he talked a lot about like subtlety. You could tell he's got an accounting background and just like really wanted to focus on numbers and the subtleties of this and talk in an academic way. I heard some people comparing like him and Ken Sim for doing that. But Ken has a very like big brand behind him and just needs to kind of show he's the competent manager that NPA voters want. But David Chen, he doesn't have a natural constituency other than Twitter trolls?
No, and the Twitter trolls bring the fire is the funny thing. So, for example, we did the foreign buyer question, you know, that Josh Gordon was in the audience and he had requested that. I couldn't not bring that up. And, you know, pro-Vancouver's very anti-outsiders buying. They're not pro-supply. They think you just restrict demand. But I don't recall his answer.
The most, like, controversial thing I think he said along that line actually came in one of the consultation discussions when he talked about how at these community consultations, there's too many like fake actors coming in or something. And he talked about people he thought were saying they were from social housing or something like that, but they were carrying new Apple laptops, so therefore they couldn't be poor.
Yes, sir.
It was a sort of, these can't be Syrian refugees. They have new iPhones. situation. And then he talked about IDing comments. Them.
Oh my God, maybe these are crisis actor renters.
It was very bizarre.
And I know, I think that one got some shocks from the audience, but that was like his only standout. And I'm not saying we want more of that, I think, but...
I think it's fair to expect something more from him, but it is early still. And so if over the course of the next 2 weeks, he doesn't step up, maybe, in his game in terms of showing people why they should actually consider him then.
Well, let's come to his right side. And at the one end of the table was Kennedy Stewart. He's polling pretty strong. And now that Vision's not running a mayoral candidate, he seems to be the odds-on favorite overall. But his performance seemed like disconnected from, or maybe it was just he recognizes he's a front runner. And so rather than make a bunch of firm commitments, his goal seemed to be more just to give his stump speech split over multiple questions. He sort of answered the first one, starting a story, went and kept it going in the second question, going into the third. And I know you, Nadia, were talking earlier about, before we started recording, about not getting an answer from him on a couple questions, on listening to it again.
No, when I went back and listened to it, other than the first question about how many homes will you build, he didn't really answer anything for the rest of the night. I mean, the key question that really stood out to me was about how would you deal with the backlog in the planning office? I don't even remember how he backed into that question, but he backed right into it, buried the lead about, you know, how those folks are unionized, and then kind of left you feeling like, so are you going to do something or not? So I didn't appreciate that, because as a voter, it came across as a very political answer. And I think Vancouverites need more than that at this point. And to see that happen over two or three questions, I'm going to be really listening closely over the next couple of weeks to how he answers questions. Actually, whether or not he actually answers questions. Because if the only concrete thing we're going to get from you is that you'll build so many homes, that's great. But Vancouver needs a lot more than just homes.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting as I think about it. In that crowd, maybe it was the crowd, because this is a very, you know, it's not all zillionaires by any means, or government, mm-hmm. not-for-profit mm-hmm. people. But it's a cerebral crowd that is fairly familiar with the issues at hand. And it's interesting that you say that about Kennedy. A moment that I thought really fell flat, there were two of them. And I didn't think they were crazy sort of resume name drops. But, you know, Ken said, oh, you know, people come from miles around to hear me talk about management. I'm glad you asked me about management. And it's funny, it's not a crazy thing to mention, but I thought it fell flat. I think any time anybody on that panel was steering in the speechifying or let me pivot to my standard stump speech, for the most part, that it just sounded off given the debate, which I think is a testament to your good job as moderators.
It's hard for them to get onto their stump speech when we only give them 90 seconds at a time. Well, skipping over David Chen, who we just talked about, we go back to Christine Boyle, who I guess we were talking about earlier, was one of your favorites, Nadia. I'd never actually met her, but I had been following her online, I think, since this spring, since she started coming up for One City. And at every stage, I've kind of been impressed by the article she's put out for in the Georgia Strait or otherwise, and just kind of developing a progressive, here's a soul for the city message. And I think she was really on that on Wednesday night.
Yeah, I appreciated the thoughtfulness, I think, that she brought to the conversation, to her answers and to the platform. And personally, I didn't really know much about her before Wednesday night. So yeah, she wasn't on my radar. She is now, definitely.
Yeah, I confess to a personal taste for where they are in terms of policy, but also the approach. I mean, very cerebral. Their Georgia State Straight column, I thought, was a nice combination of situating the issue for people who aren't the cognoscenti, but at the same time getting into the policy weeds. So, yeah, I did think it was a strong performance from a candidate who I confess to a personal appreciation for.
Well, it's really tough for someone who's pretty, like, she's got a long resume of activism and working nonprofit. And as a United Church minister, she's well practiced at speaking in public. But to translate all of that into a political candidacy and to then sit up there between, you know, people running for mayor, people who have been elected MPs, people who've been elected to council, and to be able to compete on that level takes some honest skill. So props to her for that, I think.
It does. And some politicians train to, right? They have people coach them on how to do that, on how to be more, I don't know, personable, likable, relatable. Mm-hmm. But she seems to come by that naturally.
You know, you bring up a good point, and I mean, I hate to talk about elections generally here, but I've often thought, you know, politicians spend so much time learning the policy weeds. I always think people ought to invest in acting and dance lessons, you know, because that physicality, look at Jeb Bush, you know, he could have crushed Trump on substance. Not that he's, Milton Friedman or, you know, Keynes or anything, or Paul Samuelson or anybody else, Jeb Bush. But God, he just fell so short. It was at the level of charisma and looking authoritative. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if that can be coached or not, but I always find if I was running for office, I think I'd invest pretty heavily there.
I know there's a group at Creative Coworkers that actually wants to do a dance off of council candidates. So maybe that would be a special reason for them to train up on dancing. But let's maybe talk a little bit about Shauna. I think she also did really well on Wednesday. And every time I've seen her speak, she's done really well. And she just had another forum this week where I think she was in Shaughnessy and she like was being heckled by people who wanted to tear out bike lanes. And she made a like passionate defense of them in a hostile room and just stuck to her guns, which takes a lot. And so I have a lot of respect for Shauna, but I think we're still kind of trying to figure out if she has the ground game to really move beyond just kind of being on the panel and translating it into the mayor's chair.
In a race like this, especially when there's so many people, it comes down to the ground game. And even though she's so reasonable, she's very reasonable. And, you know, the ideas that she put forward, I think, resonate with a lot of Vancouverites. And she's an independent in this race. She just doesn't have the ground game like some of the other candidates. So I'll be watching that. But that was the mm-hmm. thing that stood out to me. I did think she performed well, though.
Yeah, if you're a Vision supporter, I suppose it's either Kennedy or Shauna for you. And I know she has past relationships with Vision. I don't know how that will play out. I mean, again, she's somebody I have spent some time talking to, and I think very highly of her. And I did think it was a solid performance. You mentioned the bike lane thing. I think, again, like not David Chen, although she's not that far in the last poll separated, I think you have to take some chances, maybe stumbling into a fight with a way young over bike lanes is a way to draw attention and, you know, stand up mm-hmm. for something, in my opinion, fairly obviously right. So, you know,
you say take having a chance
on something. Well, having bike here, yeah.
Indeed. I'm a cyclist too, so. Well, mentioning Vision, the other person at the table, or one of the other people at the table, is Diego Cardona, who, the poor guy, like, in the by-election, it really felt like he was given the, you know, short straw of, all right, we need to put someone up. We know we're going to lose. Here you go. And just sort of push off the cliff to the wolves.
You know, a really nice guy. I wonder if he's looking at his political future after this and wondering whether or not, you know, he continues with this party or makes a switch. I don't know. I don't know. This is the second time around that I've seen him kind of thrown into this situation. I don't know. I feel bad for him.
Now, look, you're hearing from somebody who would be very happy to see a Gregor round three. I'm maybe one of six people in Vancouver who feels this way that doesn't work in City Hall currently. You know, I'm not an anti-Vision person, but sometimes you watch their choices and you ask yourself, are they trying to lose this election? So, first of all, you come up with Ian Campbell, who I don't think ever wanted to be mayor and, you know, stepped out of the race despite being pretty strong in the polls. Then, you know, you know it's a wonk forum. And Diego has a very compelling biography. Mm-hmm. He's not a bad guy to put out there. And maybe he wins a council seat. But in a nerd off, I mean, the poor guy, we asked that question about community amenity contributions. It involved a little bit of math and finance. Looked terrified.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a kid. I don't blame him. At his age, I'm not sure how I would have done on a question like that myself, you know, on a stage like that. So they have other candidates who are pretty well-versed in stuff who they could have put on stage. When I heard it was Diego they were bringing, I don't know what they're up to in this election.
Yeah, I think that hits it. I like him. And when I've met him, like you say, his story is powerful. And I think he cares passionately about the issues he's invested in. Wonky side of housing economics is not his strong suit. I mean, it's not my strong suit, really. Everything I know, I basically learned from you in the last like a year. But I think he still managed to hold himself pretty well for that. It's a tough
being thrown in the last minute. I thought he did well, but if the party was taking it seriously, maybe they could have done better with somebody else.
Yeah, and again, I will say, I don't think you need eight policy. How many people get to be on council? 7, 8, 11, 12? What's the
number? 10.
10, okay. So there you go. You don't need them to be economists either. But look, you don't need 100% of them. You know, so Jean Swanson, for example, we'll get to her. I wouldn't want to, one might be concerned in terms of budget balance and business continuing to operate in the city to have a council full 100% of Jean Swanson, but one to say, what about the homeless? And I thought many times, you know, what about the seniors who have, you know, their god-awful welfare rates? But that was something that nobody else mentioned. I think having somebody advocate like that. So there's certainly a place for somebody like Diego, but I'm not sure it's at the housing policy debate, and I'm not sure what Vision was thinking there.
Well, maybe the person who was the ideal choice for this forum was Pete Fry, because he is the wonkiest, I think, of the people up there. Or maybe Ken Sim. Pete Fry for the Greens is their numbers guy, as far as I can tell. And I think, you know, he played that off well. My favorite is watching you, Tom, ask your wonky question to sort of lead off what will happen if CACs change this much and how much will that change? And you can see he's already like, Pete's getting out his pen and paper to start like crunching some numbers.
I thought Pete did great. You know, I always enjoy a conversation with Pete, but I also enjoy him in this forum because I think we hear so much from him in terms of not just numbers, but reason. And I think also the perspective of someone who's lived in Vancouver for a long time, but also understands the changes that the city is facing. So I don't know. I enjoyed having Pete Fry there. And I think he did great. But the audience, I don't think, is one who was favorable to him, his party, his platform.
But I almost wonder if he was the ideal choice to kind of be the reassuring voice from the Greens, because there's a certain extent where, like, if they put Adrian Carr up, they would eat her.
Yes.
But Pete Fry, he can kind of talk through and go, you're probably not going to vote for me, but at least you shouldn't be as afraid of us as Greens. And he didn't say that directly, but by trying to talk through, or maybe it's just how he talks in terms of policy and stuff, that he comes across less scary in that audience than a Green who might otherwise just be like, why are we building anything?
Well, he's a smart guy. But once you see the Green banner, I think, yeah. You know, with certain audiences, maybe he gets written off.
Well, that's very interesting. So first of all, the physicality of him, his intonation, size, you almost hear Barack Obama. I love listening and chatting with him, and he's a smart guy. You know, there's a lot of good stuff to say about Pete Fry. In my view, again, as a, you know, given my own ideological preference, I was somewhat surprised because Adrian Carr, you know, you'd think the Green Party would say, oh, everybody should live in an apartment and bike to work. But she has been fairly solidly with the Elizabeth Murphy no taxes and single family zoning crowd in a subtle way. You know, you dress it up as environmental, but it has that sort of pro-sprawl, pro-single family feel, which, you know, the audience in that way, if you think it's a largely developer audience, they're torn. And that's the Hector Ken split between we want growth because it's our business, but we want our neighborhood left alone. So Adrian, I think, would have been somewhat comforting. Also, she's fantastic on substance. I mean, she is one of the more astute people around politics in Vancouver, in my opinion.
But I think the problem is she's been on council for so long that, you know, people see her as part of the problem.
I can totally believe that.
I don't think she is, but I think that's the perception.
Well, one thing I will say is I have been appalled, you know, in that A, I think she knows better, and B, she's supposed to be a Green, at the NIMBY lean I've seen from her. Pete, on the other hand, you know, when we asked that, you know, a question of the first impossible question where you've got the townhomes that everybody likes, except the community who's calling it a chainsaw massacre or whatever, he said, give me the chainsaw. And that is very different from what we've seen from Adrian Carr. And, you know, I thought quite interesting. So overall, yeah, I agree with both of you. It's a solid performance.
And then there's Jean Swanson, who probably faced the most ideologically different crowd, but like I think we've already gone over a few times, stood her ground strongly, was able to get the points across she wanted, was I think one of the most unwilling to, I mean, they all at some point didn't want to answer in a one word, but she always tried to like get a few more points in there, which they're all going to do, but
I have nothing but respect for Jean Swanson.
You know what I'd like to see a little more of is pushback on the economics. And, you know, you see some of this in the because there are a lot of people in Vancouver who do not believe building more market rate housing is going to do anything. In fact, I think there's that somebody did a poll on housing issues and everybody wants to crack down on those bad people who are buying all the houses. But the number of people who believe, hey, let's build a lot more market homes, and that's very much, of course, the next candidate's answer, Hector Bremner, in line. But there's not a lot of belief in that. So you would think Swanson would try to have assembled some evidence to counter it, right? She would sort of assert, well, we're not going to let rents grow. But she didn't say, and here's the evidence that even though we're going to freeze rents, you're not going to scare everybody off from being a landlord. Maybe she said it, but I didn't hear that. And that's, you know, that's the next step. Because, of course, the criticism is, you know, you're actually hurting renters because nobody's going to be a landlord. I don't know if that's true or not, but she has to have an answer for that. You can't just say, I want to crack down on supply without saying, here's my evidence. It's not going to hurt in terms of outcomes.
Yeah, she's really managed from the by-election to build such a movement that's really changed COPE in a way that where I think they used to run on big pie in the sky. Here's a whole fleshed out platform, which, you know, we can argue whether it's realistic or not. They've really just gone, well, here's three issues: mansion tax, rent freeze, and build social housing, I think, is the third.
And they resonate.
And they resonate.
Do you think they'll get a seat?
I think they'll get a seat. I mean,
I think so. And I do, you know, we talked about this as well. I do believe, you know, Jean Swanson is a voice like hers is definitely needed on council. You know, she's got a conscience. She stays true to it. And I think, you know, sometimes on certain votes, on certain issues, you need a voice like hers.
And I think for a party only running three candidates for council, running that simple message can be very effective. And it can be very frustrating as policy wonks who want to see what is everything you're going to do. And that's why one city is such a contrast, where they are trying to build a bigger platform. And it's nowhere near the document the other guy that we'll talk about in a second was waving around. But, you know, one city is trying to talk about a bunch of different things. The mayors all have to put out full platforms. But at least if you're really only running two or three for council and expecting to win one or two, go with your core issues and...
And stick to them. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
You only need to get 50,000 votes.
You know, when there's this many candidates, when you are at a low probability of winning, risks are great.
Yes.
You know, when you're losing by three touchdowns, fourth in the long, you go for it because there's nothing to lose.
Well, the person taking the biggest risk here is Hector Bremner, probably launching his whole new party on big ideas of rezoning the city. He had launched his platform the evening of the housing debate. And so
I'm curious what you both think of that, because I didn't know that it was launching the night of the debate.
I don't know if it was timed specifically for it. It feels coincidental, but it may have also been intentional.
Fantastic prop. But, you know, we're seeing all the parties, you know, admirably, just about everybody's going on the record. NPA, I mean, they've put it out there. Don't change a darn thing. Mm-hmm. And Hector, change everything in one city, as we've talked about. Shauna was the first, I think, in a lot of detail. Kennedy, not long after Shauna put his out. You know, everybody's got, you know, people are really putting themselves out there. I think it's great.
There's definitely a lot of strategy going on behind the scenes at the Hector campaign. Everything seems very marketed, and there's these AstroTurf campaigns running as well, which his campaign denies knowledge of, which is a whole other discussion. Yes. It was surprising to me to see him as the first one to pull out a prop. I really thought Jean was going to have something. I've seen her at a debate before where she does some big flashy mini protest or rolls out a hand-drawn tax bill for Chip Wilson, and here's the mansion tax he owes the city. She only ended up writing a zero in answer to the rent increase question at the end. But it was Hector with that printed out, single-sided, 80-page or whatever it is, platform.
To show an audience that is arguably, I think, would be more likely to consider him. So I think he knew, you know, who was there in the room. He knew who he was talking to, and he was really talking to them that night.
Well, it's a great crowd for him, you know, except to the extent, you know, they might live in places that he's talking about changing dramatically. And again, not everybody. What really strikes me, beyond the substance where he's really out there, just in the opposite direction of Ken Sims saying we are going to, you know, densify everywhere. I'd say, you know, whereas Ken really stood out on the analytics, and Hector's a sharp guy, I don't mean to say he's not, but he was two standard deviations above the other candidates, in my opinion, in terms of just presentation, looking and sounding sharp. You know, there's an elegance to his communication style mm-hmm. and branding. You know, after that night, exactly what Hector's brand is. It's, yes, we're going to build more homes. And he said it again and again and again. And, you know, I teach at a university. I think it's great to show videos. You know, Homer, I think, sang his books. You know, people like performance. And at the level of performance, I felt like he was in a class of his own there.
I know during the by-election campaign, at times he almost felt like he was over-trying or trying too hard to do that. I think he's gotten a lot better at it, in that it does come across more as a natural performance. Like, he doesn't feel as like he's trying to force himself to be the presenter.
You know, you're
but I do wonder still if he's almost like might come across still as trying too hard. It's hard to say.
You know, you're a smart guy who pays a lot of attention. I'm seeing a physics degree on your wall here. most people are intelligent in their own ways, but, you know, most people spend very little time. I mean, sometimes people say, oh, I'm appalled. I can't believe voters vote on that. But then I go back to, you know, if I had to vote for the National Hockey League All-Star team, you know, I'd look at Nate, well, that sounds like he's from a country where they're good at hockey. I mean, I really wouldn't even know where to start. And people would say, how could anybody pay such little attention and be so ignorant? You know, a lot of people, that's how they treat politics, which is not irrational. It doesn't, you're not going to make a difference in the election with your vote. There's no payoff to studying municipal issues. And being able to be clear, articulate, have a message that people understand, I think has a lot of value. And I think he understands that as a marketer very well.
So the other person who could have been on the stage but wasn't was Wei Yang. Turns out she was holding a rally in South Vancouver where 800 to 900 people showed up, which I'm still incredulous about. I can't. I have no clue how that happened. No one shows. I've never seen a rally so big for municipal politics.
Also, I'm surprised we didn't have a camera there.
Right? The only journalist I know who was there is Bob Mackin.
Look, I was very psyched that we got, I think, almost 200 pre-registrants for our event. She had 800. It's really, really quite impressive. I have to say, at the beginning of the campaign, you know, I thought, boy, you know, the right is only going to be two people. I didn't think Hector as well, which makes things complicated. But I had this thought in terms of persona. Maybe we've got Jeb Bush and Ken Sim and Donald Trump and Wei Yang, because she gets to have all the fun on the issues. You know, no bike lanes. We're going to tear them up. Build the wall, you know, tear them down.
And, who cares about housing?
You know, no more taxes. You know, really, she's having a fun time on this campaign trail. And I wouldn't totally write her off.
No, don't write anybody off just yet. No.
There are a lot of people, and some of them very substantial people, from what I've heard from the candidates off the record, hate bike lanes.
It's a city where everybody has an opinion about bike lanes, right? And some people are making their decision, not just about housing, but, I mean, it's housing and then it's bike lanes, you know?
I'll say it again. If you want to win this election, take chances, because there's a lot of candidates.
Well, I think that is almost the perfect place to end on. The last question I'll sort of ask is, we talked about housing on Wednesday and it was a housing forum, and so all the questions were focused on that. But we sort of housing touches on so many other aspects of life, and we touched on a little bit of seniors and we brought homelessness into it. And some of that kind of touches into the opioid crisis. What are the other issues you're kind of watching and want to learn more from these candidates? And what do you think isn't being talked about enough because of how much air housing is sucking out of the room?
There's also transportation, the local economy, diversifying it. I mean, the problem is housing is top of mind for everybody in the city. So yes, this was a debate about, you know, about housing, but every debate, housing will dominate. So I think for voters in Vancouver, they are going to have to look beyond housing to talk about the opioid crisis, to talk about homelessness, to talk about, you know, extending the train service beyond where it is running to today, to talk about the state of the economy and how we continue to grow. There's a lot of things Vancouver needs to be concerned, Vancouverites need to be concerned about. But my concern is that all of that will be eclipsed by housing, no matter the debate.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, one thing we didn't ask them is, what if housing goes bad? And you mentioned the rest of the economy, you know, what's going on? I mean, stores are getting allegedly hollowed out, you know, somewhat real estate related. But, you know, what happens if this condo boom goes bust and there's not the employment? What's next? How are you going to build the sector? Another one would be intergovernment relations. I mean, obviously, you know, that mattered. Mm-hmm. It was not the greatest relationship between Mayor Robertson and Christy Clark. We're seeing it blow up in Toronto, and who knows where things will go in the province over the next 4 years, but it'll be you know, that's probably something you'd want to see. What do you have planned? And this NDP government, they're still new to government and subject, I think, to influence, obviously, by Vancouver. So the ability and proposals for what you're going to do or ask for from the province and feds would be an interesting one as well.
All right. Well, thank you both for taking time out of your Saturday night to come and talk even more housing policy. It was a true honor to be on stage with you, Nadia. And thank you so much, Tom, for helping put all this together.
Thank you both. I've heard great stuff about the event. Only positive feedback.
Yeah, we've had great download numbers as well when we put it up on the podcast. I know a lot of people have been following it. I think the only complaint is with so many people, people can't follow who is answering what question.
It was a little tricky at times. I think we did our best, you know, to make sure that we were identifying who was speaking at what times. But I don't know. I had a great time. My very first time moderating a debate. And I think it was the first for you, Ian. Yeah. So, you know, thanks for having us, Tom.
Well, real pleasure. As I said at the beginning, there's a lot of horrible fake news out there. But you two both do a great job. And so I was very happy to have you both.
All right. Thank you.
Well, we like to close out every episode by delving into Vancouver history a little bit. And since so many candidates are going to be wearing out so many pairs of shoes, we thought we'd delve into a foot-related mystery from... I'm so sorry. From Vancouver's past. Now, this one I actually was in Vancouver for, but it is the mystery of the disembodied feet. Over the last decade, 15 feet have washed up on the shores of the Salish Sea.
So many, in fact, that there is literally a Wikipedia article entitled Salish Sea Human Foot Discoveries that documents all of the feet that have shown up on West Coast shores between 2007 and today. And I don't know why it only really starts at 2007. Like, there were some historic ones in the 19th century. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
when they started exploring the wild seas.
Yeah. I mean, like, since the creation of Leg and Boot Square... all British Columbians had had their feet cut off, and then 2007 was when they reattached everyone's feet, and people eventually did lose some of them, and they started washing up on shores. Although, like, this is basically just confirmation bias. Some reporter wrote about the severed foot that that was found, and every time a severed foot was found, it became another data point in the severed foot mystery. And as it turns out, it's just like a normal... thing that happens when a body goes missing at sea. Eventually the foot will disarticulate, and if it's in a runner, as many of these were, float to shore.
Yeah, the article tries to make it a bigger mystery than it is, and it always feels weird that other body parts don't wash ashore.
But they're not in shoes.
Like, shoes float.
Shoes float, and bodies that are not enclosed in rather, like, tough to eat Nikes, you know, not like delicious Reeboks, Reebok, they will be eaten by animals.
It definitely became a very uniquely British Columbian thing, though, over the last decade. Like, there are lots of coastal cities around the world, but I think you're right that, you know, it's a largely confirmation bias thing, but still.
Like, it does owe a little bit to geography, because we are one of the areas of the world that has a kind of enclosed... sea, like, you know, it's open ocean, but it's not, you know, it's kind of protected, but the waters can still get quite dangerous, and so people still go missing, and those people occasionally are wearing runners that find their way back to land. When people go missing in the ocean, sometimes they're just missing forever. It's what I imagine happened to the person in the Said the Whale song, Curse of the Currents.
Yeah, as far as the BC coroner can say, there's no foul play in any of these severed feet findings. It seems to be, for the most part, people who are either washed off their boat, who sadly commit suicide or otherwise end up dying at sea.
Yeah, there was like plane crashes and capsizings. Yeah. And yeah, it's just the natural part of the quotidian violence of the sea.
And your feet end up in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Or Vancouver Island.
One of the many municipalities that we are going to be covering the elections of later on. So strap on those runners and hit the hustings, candidates. We're all watching. And
if you happen to be in the area of the Belmont on October 4th, come by our live show and make your one-minute pitch if you're running for office. Or else join us on October 20th. And we'll have those details up on our website soon. For the Canby Report, I'm Ian Bushfield.
And I'm Matthew Naylor. In 32 days, this will all be done. Hold tight. Good night. Arthropods will skeletonize and disarticulate a body quite quickly, depending on oceanic conditions. Lobsters are coming for your ankles.